in the aftermath of the Oklahoma City bombing, I did counseling for children who had lost family members in that event. And it was obviously some of the most difficult situations in terms of interactions and dealing and coping in just a difficult time. There was one little girl, though, that was just a ray of sunshine. The tragedy in her life was just so extensive, and yet she just managed to rise above all of that. And she was in the class. This teacher had made these little construction paper sashes. And if you did something good in class, or if you did something that got the teacher's approval, or however you want to interpret that, you'd get a little sticker. And she used to come to our sessions, and she would show me her stickers and the stickers she had gotten over the last few days or that week. And at the beginning, I said, well, what do you do with those stickers? Can you get enough of them that you get to buy something? And she said, no, they're just stickers. Got all my stickers. Let me tell you again how important all of these stickers are. And the teacher didn't have anything to back up the stickers. You know, sometimes, you know, if you get 100 stickers, you get to do this or whatever. But it was the sticker itself that mattered. Now, the reason that I point that out, or the reason that I use that this morning, is because this teacher was the person that she was. And because that this approval and the love from the student to the teacher and vice versa was so important, that she just played a tremendous role in keeping this child afloat in a really, really difficult time. It was just amazing to see this teacher who understood encouragement and praise and acceptance and love. And she just made a huge difference. And I still have some minimal contact with that person, who's now obviously an adult. And she's done really, really well. And I really think that teacher had so very much to do with it. I've been focusing on victorious living. And I'd like to continue that. And what I'd like to do over the next couple of months is to look at Bible characters who display attitudes or behaviors that are conducive to victorious living. And I've got a selection in my mind, but I'm willing to make trades if you have one that you'd rather hear about. So if you say, I really think so-and-so and so-and-so would be a great one, then I'd be willing to make those trades in order to come from that particular point of view. But this morning I'm going to start with Barnabas. Barnabas is just literally the definition, if you will, of encouragement. It was a guy, he was a minister, and he went to church, and his topic that morning was the rich sharing with the poor. And his wife wasn't able to go that day, and so when he got home, he said, how did it go? And he said, well, it went okay. I convinced the poor. Well, encouragement gets caught in that same trap, because when we hear about encouragement, our knee-jerk reaction is, yeah, that's what I need. I need some encouragement. I need somebody to come along and share with me and make me feel better. I desperately need that, and I hope that's part of what we're experiencing together, because I need that so much. But it works a little bit differently than that. There's an old preacher story, and I'm going to share it with you. You probably heard it before from a long, long time ago, where the analogy is a scene in heaven. And you go into this first place, and these people are in heaven. They're at this incredible banquet table, the best food, and it's in these huge slices and huge pieces. And all of the utensils are giant, literally made for a giant. And in this room of heaven, the people are all working together to cut the food and distribute the food and share the food and help feed each other. And then the opposite is to go to the very next room, to what is described as being hell. And the point of the story is that it's exactly the same situation. But over there, everybody's being very selfish. It's all about me, me, me. You know, give it to me first. I want the first food. I want this. I want that. And it becomes such a competitive and destructive environment based on the way the people are approaching things. And encouragement is exactly that. We need it. We want it. We desire it. We could stand and have people encourage us as long as they would. But the reality is, in order for that to work, somebody has to start it. Somebody has to share it. Somebody has to give it. Somebody has to start making it happen. And that's kind of the way I'd like for us to begin this morning. Encouragement, we're defining, or I'm defining, as the action of giving someone support, confidence, or hope. And we certainly could use that hope in a spiritual kind of context there. Let's look quickly at three ways that Barnabas is an encourager. And there are three very different ways, but I think we can learn a lot from him. You remember that on the day of Pentecost, there's this tremendous response. 3,000 souls are baptized that day. Just think about the logistics of that for just a minute. I don't know if any of you have ever gone to a 3,000-member church, but that's a big church. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of programs. That's a lot of coordination. And this church didn't exist in the morning, and at night you've got this huge group of people. Now, just to make it more complex, there's a great number of these people, and we don't know exactly how many, but most of these people are there from out of town. And a large number of them clearly decide to stay. So now you not only have a church of 3,000, quickly to grow to about 10,000, it appears, from the book of Acts, but a large majority, maybe as many as half of those folks, don't have a place to stay. They don't have food to eat. They don't have transportation. They don't have any of the things that they're going to need. And suddenly this body is called upon to produce and to take care of the needs of this immediate family that's shown up. Barnabas distinguishes himself. It talks in Acts chapter 4 about the fact that the believers held everything in common. And Barnabas steps forward and really gives us the illustration of how that worked. It says in Acts chapter 4, verses 36 to 37, Joseph, a Levite from Cyprus, whom the apostles called Barnabas. He got a new name. Why did he get a new name? Because it means son of encouragement. Let's name this guy something else. His real name is Joseph. What should we call him? Well, let's call him the encourager. Wouldn't you like to be nicknamed that? It's a great nickname. It's a great way to be defined. And we see in this passage one of the reasons why. Verse 37 says, Barnabas sold a field he owned and brought the money and put it at the apostles' feet. How you feed those folks? How you house those folks? Well, there are people who stepped up, who owned things, who sold those and provided them. Now, there were lots of other people doing things as well. They weren't just buying the food. Somebody had to cook the food. They had to make the food. Somebody had to open their homes, and on and on and on the list goes. But Barnabas does this very dramatic, very selfless thing and shares with the entire church. And we know that that's a really big deal for one reason. Ananias and Sapphira try to copy it. They see how much Barnabas is appreciated. They see how encouraging Barnabas is. They see the credit that comes to Barnabas. And so they're trying to get that, make that same thing happen in their lives. So we know that it was a pretty big deal. When Terry and I were first in Houston, we had some friends who lived in Tulsa. And they were both very capable people, and they did very well in the jobs that they were involved in. And they bought a large, lavish home. And we heard a lot about this lavish home that they had. And we were coming to Tulsa for the workshop, and they said, why don't you stay with us? And so we went over to their house, and they had this very modest home. Very modest home. And we just kind of were like, where'd the big house go? You know? How do you ask? How do you find out? Well, they just kind of quickly explained that church is starting a bus ministry and needed buses. And so we sold the big house and bought the little house and financed the bus ministry for one of the Tulsa churches that became very famous in bus ministry. The kind of regard that you have for somebody like that is just amazing. The sacrifice of that was a huge sacrifice to make. And yet, it wasn't something that they were looking for fanfare about. It was just something that they felt like they could do and that they ought to do, and they did. But it's encouraging. It was then, and it continues to be. Okay, Barnabas is encouraging because he's willing to give. He's willing to share. He's willing to sacrifice. The second way that we see Barnabas as an encourager is in his relationship with Saul, Paul. Paul goes to Damascus. He is acknowledged by God as one abnormally born. God says he is a chosen vessel. And Paul spends time at Damascus. He spends a couple of years actually in training before he comes back to Jerusalem. And you know from reading your Bible that when he comes back to Jerusalem, people are afraid of him. They have reason to be afraid of him. And so Paul has a very hard time getting in to the church. Well, what happens that allows Paul to really be a teacher and a facilitator in church? Acts 9, verse 26 and 27. When he came to Jerusalem, this is Saul, he tried to join the disciples, but they were all afraid of him, not believing he was really a disciple. But Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles. He told them how Saul on his journey had seen the Lord and that the Lord had spoken to him and how in Damascus he had preached fearlessly in the name of God. Barnabas stands up for him. Barnabas vouches for him. Now, what if Paul had turned out to be what they thought he was? What if he was just trying to get inside of the church so that he could damage it more effectively? What if that had been the plan? What would that have done to Barnabas? Barnabas is willing to step out there and say, I have some credibility. My credibility. I'm willing to give credibility to this guy Saul because I believe who he is and I believe what he is and I believe in what God is doing in his life. There's no telling what might have happened if Barnabas hadn't stepped forward. But if you look carefully, Paul stays in Jerusalem. There's a threat on his life. And so he's forced out of Jerusalem. Where does he go? He goes back to his hometown of Tarsus. And it looks like he just kind of camps out there. Here's this great church leader, potentially, who's kind of hiding out back home. Acts chapter 11. 25 and 26. Then Barnabas went to Tarsus to look for Saul. And when he found him, he brought him to Antioch. So for a whole year, Barnabas and Saul met with the church and taught great numbers of people. The disciples were called Christians first at Antioch. Barnabas says, you know, that guy's stuck up there. He's not doing any good right now. I got to go up there and get him out of what's going on. I told you before about the man that I know. His son had gone to University of Colorado. When the first midterm grades came in, freshman year, they were all A's. And dad got those grades during the middle of the week. When he got off work on Friday night, he drove to Colorado, went into the dorm on Saturday morning, and said, get out of here. The kid had spent all of his time studying, and the dad was afraid that's what he was going to do. He said, there's a life outside of this dorm. Go out there and get involved in something else. And he actually forced the young man. Now, I didn't have any kids that I had to do that with. Maybe Maybe some of you played it from a different angle as well. Probably not many parents who did that. But Dad recognized that if I just left him there studying and all he did was study, he wasn't going to really develop. Paul is stuck here in Tarsus. And Barnabas says, come on, let's go work. Let's go get something going. They go to Antioch, and of course you know their story from there. They're going to wind up going on a missionary journey together. The first missionary journey is Paul and Barnabas. And then we come back to the third example of Barnabas as an encourager. Acts chapter 15, starting in verse 36 and down through verse 41. I only have a part of this up here, but I'm going to read all of it. So sometime later, Paul said to Barnabas, let's go back and visit the believers in all the towns where we preach the word of the Lord and see how they are doing. Go back and do it again. Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with them. But Paul did not think it was wise to take him because he had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in the work. They took John Mark on the first missionary trip. John Mark left and came back home. They get ready to go on the second missionary trip, and Barnabas says, let's take John Mark again. And Paul says, no, I don't want to. It's not a good choice. He's not mature enough to do that. Maybe that was the argument, maybe it wasn't. But for whatever reason, Paul doesn't want to take him on this second trip. They had such a sharp disagreement that they parted company. Barnabas took Mark and sailed for Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and left. Commended by the believers to the grace of the Lord, he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. Barnabas knows who John Mark is. He's a relative, but more than that, he still has confidence in this young man. And just like he stood up for the church and the people who didn't have all the things that they needed physically, just as he stood up for Saul to initiate Saul into this teaching position, now he has to stand against Paul because he's standing up for John Mark. He wants to encourage John Mark. Now, what's riding on this? You know, John Mark's going to go on to write a gospel. What if John Mark had developed the reputation of being a quitter? That's certainly the way Paul was seeing him at that point in time. I have a good friend who, when he graduated from college, he and his brother went into farming. It was the family farm that had been in the family for generations, and they just couldn't make it go. And the time came when they had to go to their dad and say, we got to sell the farm. It's just not going to work. And the dad said to them, I never thought my boys would be quitters. And that's 30 years ago. And that one statement hurts my friend deeply to this day. Nobody likes to be called a quitter or viewed as a quitter. John Mark was going to have that stigma attached to him in all probability. And Barnabas says, no, 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 this guy's got a lot to offer. This guy has a tremendous opportunity. This guy is smart and he's capable and he's spiritual. We're going to give him another chance. And Paul said, then we're not going together. And Barnabas says, okay, you go do your trip and I'll go do my trip. And both of those mission processes take place basically because Barnabas wants to continue to be this encourager. Now, how did that turn out? Let me share a couple passages with you. Colossians 4, verse 10. Paul there writes, my fellow prisoner Aristarchus sends you his greetings, as does Mark, the cousin of Barnabas. You have received instructions about him. If he comes to you, welcome him. He writes to the Colossians and says, Mark's right here. If he comes to see you guys, take him in. Paul's attitude about John Mark has clearly shifted. And then when you look at 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 10, this is the last chapter that Paul will write. And near the end of that, he says in verse 11, only Luke is with me. Get Mark and bring him with you because he is helpful to me in my ministry. Bring that guy that I'd given up on 30 years ago because I need him. Barnabas had done the right thing. Barnabas had encouraged over and over and over again. So how do we make that practical? Well, let's go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 11. Very simple. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. If we look at Hebrews chapter 10, part of what we do when we gather as a church family is to encourage each other. How do we do that? Sometimes we do that just by having great conversations. Sometimes we do that just by our presence, by knowing that someone else has made the effort to be here. But it can take on more ramifications even than that. Sometimes it's a person to share a hardship with or a difficulty or to ask some advice perhaps in a difficult situation. Sometimes it's that person who comes up to you, puts a hand on your shoulder and say, are you okay? You doing all right? You feel okay? And if you share something with them, they are able to provide some support for you. Part of what we do when we see each other is to encourage one another. And I think we do that quite well as a church family. But there are always times and there's always opportunities to do it better. What if when you got out of the car, when you came to church, you said, I'm going to make a conscious effort to encourage 5 people at church today. First of all, and I've said this before, how long would it take to encourage 5 people? Really not very long. Now, you might get caught up in something and you only had one person that day. That's fine. Back when we were in youth ministry, there were some guys in the church. And they decided, we had these Timothy classes where we taught the little boys how to pray and sing and direct and those kind of things. And they just, these two guys in church just felt like that wasn't enough. They both had kids in that age group, sons in that age group. And they decided that, in order to be a real minister, you had to have more than just those skills. Neither of them were, but, they thought they knew what ought to take place. And so they made the rule that you had to wear a little white shirt when you came to their Timothy class. You had to wear a tie. All the boys wore little clip-on ties. And at the very end of class, they'd get them all up by the door and do a sales talk, kind of rah-rah deal. And then they'd let the little boys out, and they had to greet 5 people as quickly as they could, And they wanted them to shake hands and put their eye right on them and eye contact. And so, boy, if you were standing there, this 30 kids came barreling out, looking for hands to shake, And it was really cool, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, unless you were the 6th person. And if you were the 6th person, they weren't interested. They did 5. They pulled their tie off. They chunked their Bible onto the pew, and they went outside to the playground. And sometimes that's what can happen to us. We can get so caught up in the trappings. And in our world, we sometimes only teach the trappings. How to create the illusion that you're encouraging instead of really, truly being encouraging. It's not as hard as you might think. It's actually something that builds us up. And I guess I said at the beginning, how do we get to the place where people are encouraging us? Well, it starts with us encouraging others. And then it takes root and it grows and it comes back to us through that way. But it's got to be real. A shoulder, a hand, a word, an expression. I read at the beginning the passage from Romans chapter 12 where it talks about the fact that we have different gifts. And the people at Corinth had a problem with this. Maybe the people at Rome did. I don't know. But people looked around and said, I want a better spiritual gift. I want to be able to speak in tongues if you were in Corinth. And Paul here is saying, whatever your gift is, use it. If your gift is encouraging, then encourage. If you have a whole lot to share like Barnabas did, then share it. But use the gift that God gives you. And I think if we're honest, most of us have the gift of encouragement. We're capable of doing that. That's something we can do each and every time we run into people in the world and people who are our spiritual family. We have the opportunity to do that. We miss the Webbs. Miss Reva. Reva is a skilled encourager. I just can't think of all the times when she has encouraged me. She's blessed my life over and over again. She has that gift, and she's always used it quite effectively. Let me end with this story. It was a small high school. They only had like about 20 seniors. And the seniors had a bad case of senioritis. Nobody wanted to be there. Everybody wanted to be gone. They all wanted to be moving on to the next thing. And they were kind of taking out their frustrations on each other. And there's a lot of conflict going on in the senior class. And so there was an English teacher there. She taught for about 40 years. And when the kids came to English that day, she said, "Get out a piece of paper, write your name at the top of the paper, and then pass it on to the next person." And what she had those kids do was to write down one positive thing about each of their classmates and to sign it. It seemed to work, and it seemed to help. And about 10 years later, one of the young men who graduated that year was killed in an accident. And at his funeral, the person who was doing the funeral mentioned the fact that from that day forward, that young man had carried that piece of paper with him everywhere he went. He had spent 10 years with that in his pocket. And because of that, they had actually placed it with him so that he would be buried with that. After the funeral service, there's 6 or 8, maybe 10 of these seniors out in the foyer out there, and it comes up about the piece of paper. And this girl opens her purse, and she goes in there, and she's got hers. And a guy pulls his wallet out, and he's got his. And about half of the people in that little group are still, like the young man who's passed away, they're still carrying that. They still look for positive things. Encouragement is so important. I don't know if you've ever seen that special where they go through Abraham Lincoln's pockets. The night that he had died, he had some Confederate money in his pocket. He had a couple of little tokens. And he had a positive editorial that had been written about him during the Civil War. And apparently it looked like at times he would go back and reread that because it was an encouragement to him. God knows that we need encouragement. And he encourages us in a lot of ways, but he gives to us the primary responsibility of encouraging each other. And if we're going to live victorious lives, we have to balance the need for encouragement, the encouragement we need and the encouragement that we can give to help other people. Would you pray with me? Dear God, our Father in heaven, we thank you so much for the plan that you have for us. We thank you that there are people who love you and care about you, and because of that, they care about us as well. Father, we pray that we might make those relationships real and right and strong by being an encouragement to each other. Help us not to encourage in negative ways, but help us to lift each other up in positive ways. Help us to value that and to know that and to understand that and commit ourselves to doing just exactly that. Father, we pray this through your precious Son. Amen.